My man Russ Dorsey with us here. MLB.com has covered Chicago sports seemingly since he came out of the womb, even though about 20 years younger than me.
Russ, like
I mean, you've been doing it for a while now, right? More than a minute?
Yeah, started at 19 and 25. Even though I don't think this year counts, I think I get another shot at 25 in 2021. But yeah, since 19, doing a little bit of everything.
So we could talk a little baseball, but I really just wanted to get your thoughts on everything that's going on and a lot of people in a ton of pain. I know that I am, and I want you know, I'd love to hear from you what you would want people to know sitting in your seat as a 25-year-old African-American man who's watching everything that's happening in this great city and all across the country. But, you know, it's obviously an incredibly challenging time for everyone.
I'm not going to lie to you, man. It's been last week. I'll even say week has been tough. And you want to be alone and you want to not talk about it and you want to, you know, be with your friends and family who are going through too. And it's difficult, man. It really is. And you know, people expect you to be this journalist and, you know, you have a job due and you almost like we can't have feelings and can't get emotional about things. And I think one of the things I want people to know is like, I was born a black man, not a journalist, you know, and I have a responsibility to stand up for myself and my family and my friends and the things I believe in. And, you know, it's hard when you want to do the right thing and you want people to know and understand you and your perspective and where you come from and the things you go through on a daily basis. And it's hard, man. It's hard. And I know people see me do my thing all the time. And it's like, Russ, you're on TV and you're on radio and you're covering all these teams and stuff. And I think the thing that I've been on the phone since like Thursday morning, man, with just different people. And the thing that I've been trying to tell people is, dude, that act could have been me on TV that you saw. And I don't want you to see me as your friend or whatever on TV and that'd be the first time you care about the things that I go through every day. And, you know, if I'm out there on the street and, you know, I leave the ballpark and I leave wherever is somebody's studio and I'm just another dude out there. And, you know, you just want people to care about you, not because, you know, I write or I know athletes or I talk about them or you see me talk about trades and stuff on TV, but you know, you just want people to care and you want people to have empathy. And a couple of years ago, when one of these things happened and I was with my mom and I'm like 21 and, you know, I couldn't get to sleep like the last couple of days. And I sit on my mom's bed and I just put my head on her shoulder and she starts crying and she says, you know, I just want somebody to care about my babies like I do. And it's, you know, you think, well, that's your mom. Nobody's going to love you like she does. But what she was trying to say was she just wants people to care about me when she's not around. And it's, you know, as black people, we have to carry a lot. And, you know, my mom shouldn't have to worry about her adult son and being able to go and drive around and do everything that you have to do. And but she does. And so when you see people in pain and you see people hurting and you see people that you say you love and say you care about or you follow this person and for what they as a journalist or whatever, and just know that like we're just like you, man, and we want to go home to our families and our wives and our kids and our girlfriends and our parents and, you know, all of that. And it's been tough, man. It's been tough.
So I wouldn't know you, Russ, if you didn't cover MLB and I wasn't on Sports Talk Live with you.
Right.
And I didn't get to meet your dad who came to the show. And I didn't know you from anything at that point. And I just felt this warmth from you. And I loved that you brought your dad to the show. And you've just been somebody that I sort of instantly respected. A part of it was your success being so young in the business and doing what you're doing. And then also, you know, you're covering a sport that, you know, a lot of people like baseball's not black enough, right? I mean, there's, and like to love baseball as a black man, it's like, it almost feels like I can't put myself in your shoes, obviously. But I do wonder if it's confronting. Because it's not basketball, it's not football. There's a different animal there, and you know the history of the game is not so much different than others, but it has an ugly history and a beautiful history all at the same time.
I think you know, when I think about one of the reasons I got into baseball, reporting about baseball, it was not that I didn't love the other sports. Like, you know, I love basketball, I love football, and shoot, hockey. But I looked at the landscape of journalism in those sports, and like we had football covered. You know, we have people like Vaughn McClord and people doing their things in the NFL. And I look at basketball, and we have, you know, my guy Vinnie Goodwill and Mark Spears and shoot Jason Now and Sherrod Blakely and all these guys that cover the NBA. And you have that covered. And I just looked at baseball, and it was the sport that I played till I got to college, and the one that got me my love for sports, and it's the one that connected me with my dad. And it was it's like there's no me in reporting in baseball, and I was, you know, you're always confident in what you can do, and I was a young gun and wanted to really just show people like I can do this, you know, that why can't I do what Hassan or Ken Rosenthal or any of those guys do, and really just want to be a face that other kids who were 10 and 9 and love baseball could be like, oh, I look like that dude. And so everything I've done so far and in my career in baseball has been to be that, and not only to be successful at it, but to just, you know, be somebody for the next generation of people who want to do what I do.
It's beautiful. I was reading, you know, was going through your tweets and just been living on social media, which feels like it's, you know, A, not enough, and B, also enlightening at the same time. And you tweeted out, you know, for those who want to learn more, you tweeted out two books, A White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo and Between the World and Me by, I'm going to mess up this name, but Ta-Nehisi Coates,
I believe. Yeah, Ta-Nehisi Coates, yeah.
So we can't substitute, and I haven't read these books, and I'm going to order them when we get off this Zoom. But and I'm not, I know you can't substitute from actually reading the book, but if you could summarize some of the things that you would learn by reading, what those two in particular, what would you say?
Well, I'll start with Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates. I think that's the one where it's just like, all right, I wanted to, you know, being on the phone with people, you get the what can I do question. And, you know, these were long phone calls too. It wasn't like 5 minutes, hey, how are you? This is what's going on. I don't feel great. Bye. It was real conversations with people. And I really wanted to share. And I know a lot of people right now feel like I don't want to have to give, you know, help, and I don't want to have to help you know what you need to do, like because I'm hurt and I feel like you should know and you see like what's going on, so just do something. At the same time, it's I think for me, I want to at least be able to help in some way and be like, look, as my friend, I appreciate that you care and you give a damn, because there are not a lot of people who do, as we've seen. So but it's more than just me telling you something. It's like studying and educating yourself on issues and things that go on with black people. So like Between the World and Me, it gives somebody, a white person, a non, you know, black person, an idea into what we go through as Black people living in America, and just really just understanding our trauma and why we feel the way we do about the police, and why we have to have this guard up all the time, and why we feel certain ways about things is because different things about institutionalized racism and systemic oppression and all these different things that, you know, bring that we've been fighting since Reconstruction, you know, since slavery and going through slavery to Reconstruction, Reconstruction to Jim Crow, Jim Crow to the Civil Rights Movement to Rodney King, Rodney King to Ferguson, Ferguson to now. And same thing, man. Same thing. And it gives people an idea like, all right, people have been going through this forever. And instead of having my view of Black people be through what I see on social or what I see on TV or what I hear in music, let me understand what in the life of Black people is. And I think that book does a decent job of that. And then White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo, I think that's the one where I think for white people who aren't the Mark Carmens of the world, right? And don't know and understand people, who they are, and don't know Black people, don't hang with Black people, or even if they do, don't know them on a level where it's just like, this is somebody who is at a disadvantage in life, and I have a privilege, and I've never known, or I know, and I don't care. And it's the book basically talks about why, you know, why people get so defensive when racism is brought up. And it, and Robin DiAngelo, for everybody out there, is a white woman, and really just goes into in depth about explaining why people feel, why white people feel the way they do about racism. And I think it's an eye opener for people, because I think when you first see that title, you're like, oh, somebody, a Black person or somebody else wrote this. It was like, no, this is somebody from the white community that's like, yo, you have a privilege, and that privilege is causing you not to want to understand how other people, Black people, are going through different things. And I think those two things together will really open a lot of people's eyes up to what you're seeing right now. Like, I was telling a friend this weekend, in the 60s, when during the Selma marches and during the Montgomery marches, where white America sees kids and women and pastors be sprayed with fire hoses and getting chased with German shepherds and stuff. It was the first time that most people had ever seen what was going on in the South during the Civil Rights Movement. And I hate that this happened to George Floyd, but you've seen for the last 4 months, like, we've seen people get killed on Twitter. You know, Twitter is where you go to joke with people, see funny videos, all like that. We've seen people get killed on Twitter and social media for the last 4 months. And for a lot of people, just like in the 60s, this is the first time you've really seen what Black people have gone through for centuries. And it's an eye opener, and it's not a pretty one. And it's not one, you know, a lot of people are just like, it's just too heavy, I need to turn this off. It's like, you know, sometimes you shouldn't. And especially when this is something that you don't go through on an everyday basis, you should look at it, see it for what it is, tell people about it, understand what people go through. And you have to be able to make a difference and change it. Cause it's like, I would want nothing more than to just write about baseball and not have to worry about anything else. But I don't have that choice. I don't have that option. And I wouldn't feel right if I did. You know, I just sent a tweet out about, you know, on April 15th, on Jackie Robinson Day, like, my timeline is overflowing with content, you know, and it was really quiet this weekend. And when I was hurting, I saw, you know, I saw all the accounts, even the accounts of the people that is the umbrella for where I work. I saw them not say anything, and it hurts. It hurts a lot, man. So those are, the long story short, those are the two books that I do think are a starting point. They're not the be all end all, but they're a starting point for people to understand a lot of things that are going on right now.
Yeah, so you said a lot there, Russ. I go back in time for me, and I've understood, at least on some level, the concept of privilege. And, I grew up in Highland Park, Illinois, the land of privilege. And, you know, I've told the story on the radio. I'll tell it again now, where, you know, we're driving and my dad picks up a hitchhiker. Now, I'm 8, 9 years old. This dude's got a bag on his shoulder. He doesn't look like he showered at any time soon. I'm scared. This is a white guy he's picking up. Doesn't really matter. I guess maybe it does. Whatever. He picks him up, gets in the car, and, you know, where are you going? Well, he thought we were getting on the highway and going north, and we weren't. So we drove him for like 500 feet, and we dropped him back off. But, like, my dad was teaching me a lesson right there. That dude's no different than you. He's entitled to just as much of the ride that you're getting. At least that's how I'm feeling about it now. And I remember my mom, who cut hair in our basement. And she brings up this guy at 6 o'clock on around dinner time. Hey, Mark, I want to introduce you to Mr. Smith. Hey, Mr. Smith, how are you? Mr. Smith's a bigot. And I don't know what he said down in that basement when she was cutting his hair, but whatever he said, she wanted to shame him in front of a kid. And so I've had the benefit, you know, for my parents of teaching me at least some level of right and wrong that I've always held. And I've understood, I mean, how could you not? Look, when I'm being followed by a policeman, I'm scared, right? I don't want to get a ticket. I don't know what's going to happen. But it's nowhere near, obviously, what happens as an African-American person. And I know the conversation's been out there with, you know, there's just a bunch of bad apples. And I see the conversation going forth. Well, it's actually a lot worse than that. Because Derek Chauvin had 19 some odd complaints in his file. And those are just the ones that made it to his file. So, and he still had a job. So, you know, it's worse than that. And we haven't really listened. And then everybody, you know, got their phones and now we're seeing it. Oh, it's worse than what people have been saying. What black people have been saying. So I'm not saying this to act like I'm some great guy over here, because I'm not. I could be doing a lot more. And I'm reading stuff from, you know, Barack Obama put out a piece in the Medium today about voting in local elections, how that can really impact change. I don't do that. I haven't done that. So there's that's not a big ask, you know? So, you know, I just think for someone in my seat, white America, like looking in the mirror and seeing where you can be better, and being understanding. It pains me, you know, to go back in time, and this is just a little small part of a million conversations, but the Colin Kaepernick conversation and how much pushback was going on at that time. It was so wrong. It's so incredible. And not everything he did was smart. Should he have worn socks with policemen on there as the pig hole thing? Sure, he shouldn't have. That was not a great add-on. But what he was trying to do was truly beautiful. And people didn't want to hear that. So I don't know what to say all this means, Russ, but I'm just hoping that, because I have seen a lot of people, as you were just talking about, that there have been a lot of comments on social media from white people who seem to care, and then there's silence from others and all that type of stuff. But there's a want to do it, and then I also worry that, you know what, we're going to have this big moment where everyone's going to talk, and we're going to go right back to it. That's the human condition right there. We just want to be comfortable. We don't want to give up the privilege. So I just hope that we're on the verge of something better here. And I don't know if we are or not, but I'm going to try to do my part on the bare minimum here, can I get to the polls and put out important voices like yourself right now?
Status quo is convenient, man. Like, yep. You think about having to making a change, one, and like, let's say you're a smoker and you stop smoking. Like, that's a big deal. And it's something you've been doing for so long, it's second nature to you. Like, I drink coffee every day. Like, I have my Dunkin' Donuts cup right here. And it's second nature to me. So if somebody said, Russ, you got to stop drinking coffee. And I even did it like a couple months ago after spring training. I stopped drinking caffeinated coffee. I'm like, I went straight to decaf. And it was hard, man. Like, I was like, nah, man, I can't stop. I've been on it for too long. The point of all that is just like making a change is difficult. And when you've gone through years and years and years and years of having this head start, and it's just like, well, I kind of like where I'm at. And well, there's some bad people that might take it to view this. You can't, it's easy for people to be like, nah, never mind. Somebody else will do it. Somebody else will do it. Somebody else will do it. You think about the 2016 elections, right? Two people that nobody really liked. And you knew one was worse than the other, but people were like, eh, I can't vote for her. So, I won't vote. Somebody else will do it. Somebody else will do it. And you see what we have now because somebody else was going to do it. And you have to take care of business, man, for the good of yourself and for the good of everybody else. Like, you have to do what's right. And what's right isn't always celebrated. It's not always going to make people feel good. But it comes a certain point where you got to draw a line in the sand and be like, am I going to be part of the problem or part of the solution?
I actually think it's worse than what you just put out. And I'm not calling out anybody by name, but for a long time, and on multiple levels, we have valued, and sometimes we've been wrong about how we've even valued that, but that's a different discussion, but we have valued the almighty dollar over everything. It's been number one. That's how we vote. And social issues, that's down the line. A million other things are down the line. The environment, down the line. Because we want to live, quote unquote, our best lives right now. And it's just upsetting. And I'm still, in the whole like left right thing, that's exhausting too. Right wrong. It's and I don't think it's that hard to figure out. I really don't. But the action part of it, that's okay. Now we're changing some habits that you're talking about as far as the coffee and everything else. And that's a larger commitment. And people are busy and whatever, they got their lives going on and their comforts. But like, some of this is very small. I got three quotes for you, Russ. Everyone's been quoting MLK, and I pulled a couple of mine that I want to remind people that, one of them is this: human progress is neither automatic nor inevitable. Every step toward the goal of justice requires sacrifice, suffering, and struggle. The tireless exertions and passionate concern of dedicated individuals. Like, yo, it ain't gonna happen unless you get it. This is not something that just falls off a tree. I thought that was a great one. I'll read you two more real quick. People fail to get along because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. They don't know each other because they've not communicated with each other. And then the last one: I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word. And I love that hope. But it goes back to the first one where it's going to take some action.
Right.
And
when people like to, we talk about convenience, it's convenient to grab a flowery Martin Luther King quote and put it out there. And oh, he was about nonviolence. And I'm like, you don't know Martin Luther King as well as you do. Like, those same people that put those things out don't want to put out the rioting is the language of the unheard. You know, you have thousands of people across the country who are just tired. They're tired of people taking a dump on them for centuries and centuries. If I were to come to your house, Carm, and I look through your window and you and your wife have all this food on the table, all this great food on the table, and I haven't eaten in a year, I'm going to knock on the door. Hey, excuse me, I'm really hungry. I need some food. And you say, shut up. And you slam the door in my face. You do that for a week. After a week, I'm going to bang on the door. Hey, man, I'm just really hungry. I need some food. Shut up. And you slam the door in my face. After a month, I'm going to be kicking on your door. I need food. You do that for a year, I'm going to kick the door in. I'm going to take your food. And I might kick your ass for treating me like crap for a year. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that I promote looting or any of this stuff out there, because there are a lot of opportunists out there and people taking advantage and wanting to hijack the situation and hijack the protest. But all I'm saying is you can't be, you know, status quo like we were talking about for all these years and then treat people a certain way. And then when the situation flips and those people aren't going to take that anymore, then say, whoa, 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 you have to do this peacefully. Well, no, because we saw a dude do it peacefully and he no longer has work. And then you feel like you can just treat people this way. And then when those people are just like, no, I'm not going to take this from you anymore, now you feel threatened. And you can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways, bro.
I love the way you put that as far as the food. It's true. A little get out of your bubble, out of your comfort, could go a long way. Russ, I appreciate you doing this. You know, I could ask you a flowery question, like, do you think we're going to have baseball? But I don't know if you know the answer to that one.
I don't know, man. I'd say if we don't have an agreement by the end of the week, I would be concerned, just because you're running out of time, man. Like, it's June 1st, yeah, as we sit here now. Like, it's not a ton of time. So, yeah, guys want 100 games. And it's like, I don't know how you do that without putting players at risk of getting injured, because you're just going to be playing a lot, man. It's going to be a lot.
I do wonder if, not that it should matter. Well, maybe it should. I don't know. The events of this, you know, past week/weekend will have any impact about trying to get out there and doing something positive, because it's an even further opportunity for guys to. And I don't think that millionaires should be giving billionaires money back and all that type of stuff. But sometimes, you know, maybe it just would feel better to get out there and play and hope that you. I also do think, from a player standpoint, on a business side level, like, if you do get out there and make some money, maybe there'll be more money for you down the line here when you hit free agency. So there's that too. Anything that we missed here that maybe stood out as far as, you know, anything you've experienced the last week or so?
No, I just care about people, man. Care about people. Call people. Call your black friends and say, hey, man, I'm thinking about you. I care. If nobody else does, you know, I care about you and what happens to you and people who look like you and your family, and just show compassion, man. Show empathy for people you don't know. And it doesn't matter, because those people have families and those people have dreams that they want to achieve, and they deserve every right to achieve those dreams without having to feel like they can't because things like this happen. So, yeah, man, just care about people.
Well, we were supposed to do this podcast on
on April.
Like, not actually that long ago.
Yes, yeah. It was supposed to be April 29th.
Well, so I asked Russ, for the record, like, hey, can you do a podcast on a Monday? He's like, yo, I'm booked for the next 3 months on Monday.
Like, but Mondays. But we figured out a Monday. I hate that it had to be, like, at a time like this. Yeah, but I think this is an important one, though.
Yeah, well, and I say that just because when I sent you the text, I was like, I hope you don't feel like I'm trying to, you know, put you in an awkward spot, because I get that this is an extremely awkward time, but I did want to, you know, if you were willing to talk, I really wanted to hear what you wanted to say.
Man, I had said no to a couple people and was like, man, I'm not even in a position where I want to talk. And he texted me this morning and I woke up late and I was just like, yeah, I'll jump on with my man Carm, because I know we're going to get to the real. So I appreciate you having me on, man.
I really appreciate you doing it, Russ. Absolutely. You take care, and let's do this. Bottom line, let's do it right. Thanks for being with me, Russ.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.